all the horses, when we walk out to the barn, they're just ecstatic to see us. And it is not because we're just handing them food. It is because we have developed a relationship based on trust.
Today we have Shona Karish and Jess. Did I say that correctly? Karish.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Shona Karish and Jesse Hilligus of Shona Karish Equine. They both specialize in positive reinforcement training. Guys, welcome to the Horse Trailer Post podcast. Happy to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
Yeah. So first of all, for folks like myself, can you explain what positive reinforcement training is and how it differs from other traditional training methods?
So when you think of the marine mammals and you know, everyone's pretty much seen a sea lion show or a dolphin show, and they use the high pitched whistle and it's all based in positive reinforcement. So that's the kind of training. It is science based, but so is traditional training. Pressure and release is part of the same science. And so it's focusing on utilizing more, adding something to the equation that the horse wants, likes, values. So you're creating kind of a different, it actually creates a little, we're finding through neuroscience, a little different emotional state. So it is, it's a great tool to use. And I think one of the things that's happening lately that might be not as helpful is sometimes people think it is the end all. This is how we train behaviors, but there's still so much more to horsemanship than just how we train behaviors. So
nice. Shona, question for you. I read your quote. It says, you may be able to force a horse into a trailer, but just try it with a walrus. You started your training career outside of the equestrian world and working with marine animals. So can you share a bit about your background and what that transition looked like?
Yeah. I as a kid, I was sexually abused from a really young age. And so I ended up being in a state of learned helplessness. And this kind of fits in with, I didn't really grow up as a horse kid. And I mean, there's pictures of me in diapers being on a horse, but it was when what was happening to me, I went to the adult, you know, that I should be telling, and they didn't know what to do with it. So it was kind of ignored. And so I was in a state of what's called learned helplessness. I did what I could at 4 years old, you know, and tried to get help, and it wasn't available. So now at that young age, I didn't have much control over things. So you kind of shut down a little bit. Oh, my granddad had a hobby farm with quarter horses, and we would go there. All my cousins and I would go there every weekend because it was, you know, he's busy doing other things. And we would work with the horses, or we'd play with the horses. We'd ride the horses. And when I was about six, I remember my dad being in his car because we'd have to round them up every weekend because they lived in giant fields. And so us rounding them up, and it dawned on me, they don't want to be caught. You know, but once we caught them, we could do whatever we wanted to them. And I didn't know why this made me so uncomfortable at that young age. Now as an adult, I know exactly what it was behaviorally, and it was the learned helplessness, but that is what the horses were in too. They fought to not be caught. And then once they were caught, they were safe as could be. So that was kind of, I didn't do horses as a kid, but I loved animals. So I kind of kept going through my career and found my way to, you know, I wanted to do field research, ended up at SeaWorld working in education. Then I got a job with animal behavior, and it started as a summer job. And then I was there for, you know, the next year, they at the end of the summer, they offered me a full-time position. So there I worked at SeaWorld in San Diego for 10 years. And this is where I learned to train animals all across the board. You know, so this is where it started for me. Well, then when I was about, I guess I was probably 8 years into my career, and Elizabeth Busch Burke of Anheuser-Busch gave some of us trainers tickets to see a show jumping Grand Prix in Del Mar out there in California. Right. And so we all go, you know, and the everybody else like, yeah, okay. Well, I was kind of like, now I started to be the 12-year-old kid. You know, now all of a sudden I'm like, wait a second. this is fascinating to me. And I knew a different way of training now. So it didn't feel the same of as what felt so uncomfortable as a little kid for me. So now I started looking into it. And did I see stressed horses at the show? I absolutely did. I saw plenty of horses that, you know, it didn't look interesting to me at all. The horse looked stressed, the person looked stressed. But there are two horse and rider combinations that made it look like a walk in the park. And that was what I thought. I thought that looks really fun and I want to do that. So then I started looking into horse training and how horses were. I had access to Grand Prix show jumping and their people. And I kept looking and they're like, no, it's not how it's done. Horses aren't smart enough. Horses can't learn that way. I heard no, 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 no. But it kept, you know, I, with my own eyes, had seen target trained, like in person, hyenas, meerkats, hippos, rhinos, lions, tigers, giraffe, bears, goldfish, shark. So I it did make sense that horses couldn't learn that way, but I hadn't done it, so I didn't know. And so finally, I just never pursued it, but it stayed in my head. And finally, I was reading People magazine, and there's this blurb about a man named Tom Dorrance. And so I thought, he sounds different than what I'm hearing from these Grand Prix show jumpers. So right. I called him. I mean, because this is how long it was. You called 411.
With a rotary phone.
Yeah. I'll be 50 in April, so I'm well aware of the rotary phone.
So I called information, and it said where he, you know, where he kind of hailed from. And so I looked him up and I called him and I chatted with him on the phone. Now, I didn't know who Tom Dorrance was. I just knew this man sounded different than the others. And he's the one that encouraged me to go forward, to move forward, that it was definitely, you know, something he was interested in. And it turned out he had actually utilized food in some training. But what he didn't know was how to feed the food, how to do it in a systematic way, like we understood as marine mammal trainers. So, and what I loved about Tom Dorrance, he was super sweet, super nice, and that he was still wanting to learn. He wasn't young, you know? And so, I mean, this is probably, I don't know, 89, 90, you know, somewhere, it's a long time ago, but he still wanted to learn more. And he actually invited me to come to his ranch and work with him and do and put it into effect with him. I was like, I have to work. You know, I didn't take him up on that at all, but I didn't really know who he was. But what that happened in that conversation is I thought that I'm taking jumping lessons. And that's where I started. And it was, you know, that's kind of, he's the one that really gave me the permission to move forward. And so I appreciate that about him. And I'll never forget that encouragement. And then, so now I start taking lessons. I start riding. I'm trying to learn how it's done traditionally. You know, something's working. I'm not trying to come in and change everything. I was just trying to figure out, how does it work? What is going on? What is, you know, I didn't even understand. I knew traditional training, you know, that negative reinforcement, the pressure release, and pressure release just meaning the negative means it's a subtraction, not something, you know, beating them, you know, like we used to think. And so I understood it from textbooks, but I had never put it into practical application. So to understand and experience with the horses a little bit. And then I had a boyfriend who became a husband and then an ex-husband. Anyway, he's a good guy, but he was friends with somebody named John Madden, not the football John Madden, a BZ Madden being a Grand Prix show jumper, Olympic gold medalist show jumper. And so his friend was coming into town they're all about the horses. He's coming into town to design courses. So we go out to dinner. And Vinton said, tell John about the training you do with the marine mammal. So I was like, okay, you know, I start talking about the positive reinforcement and science, and he just gets more and more interested. And finally, at the end of the night, we never call it clicker training with the marine mammals because we didn't use clickers. We called it target training, really, is what we did. So we did have some clickers we'd use with the sea lions, walruses, and otters at one point. So we went home at the end of that night and we gave John a clicker. He went home. You couldn't buy him in stores then. I mean, it was that long ago. And right. and it was that not, you know, really part of the dog world was just starting. So we sent him home and he went back to the farm in upstate New York where John and BZ are and have the, you know, all their horses. And the BZ had a horse that came to them with that didn't like riding stick, didn't like on the ground, didn't like it under saddle, didn't like you to have it, didn't like your neighbor to have it. It wasn't going. And so John called that first day and said, I not only got this horse to touch the riding stick, I can't get him to stop. Right. And so we could turn that big of a no into that big of a yes this quickly. There's a place for this in Grand Prix show jumping. Please come here, move here. Let's figure this out. Let's put it into action. Let's start a business. And so that is kind of where it all started. And I feel like that first time with John and BZ, it was kind of like my lab time, you know, where I was trying to figure out how much or what, how does it work? What how does it all go together? So I cherish that time. I learned so much more in that being under the tutelage of such wonderful horse people.
Yeah. What an amazing story.
Yeah.
Lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. Sorry. I don't know where that came from. Jesse, so, you know, you come from a traditional riding background, from what I understand. Yeah. Can you share more of your story and what was that pivotal moment for you that made you turn toward positive reinforcement training?
Yeah, so when I grew up riding, I probably started riding when I was 10 or something like that, and just rode locally at first and rode with a bunch of different trainers. I never really had one consistent trainer growing up. I rode with a lot of people. I think I read somewhere at one point that riding with as many people as you could was going to make you the most successful rider. So that's what I did. As I got older, I started to work for other trainers. And one trainer in particular gave me the opportunity to ride many, many horses. We probably rode like 10 horses a day. And I also taught her in her lesson program. So the kids would come after school and I would teach, I don't know, maybe 20 a day. It's a right. huge operation. So I learned a great deal there. And then probably 5 years ago, so 2017, I think okay. it was, I had a horse come back to me and I had bred her. So she was born here and she was a really good girl, very sweet, but very, she's one of those horses that's like, she tries hard. She's very sweet, but she definitely needs to be in careful hands. And I sold her to someone as a long yearling thinking this was a great home. And it was a great home. The woman still owns her. The horse is still here, but the woman owns her and has always done right by her. But, she sent her to a trainer for a period of time and she ended up just not fitting into that program very well. They were showing her on the line in hunter breeding. So okay. she was like showing at Devon and places like that. And it just wasn't working for her, that situation. I don't really know all the things that happened with her, but she was very much struggling. So the owner took her out of there, sent her back to me. And I did not know what to do. I was just, there was nothing I could do. She would, if I raised my hand to go to just pet her, she would kick out at me. If I walked past her, she'd try to bite me. She would canter in circles in her stall for no seen reason that I could tell. There were no triggers that were, I mean, sometimes there were definitely triggers, but a lot of times there was just nothing that I could tell that was a cause for the reason that she'd just start double barreling the walls or right. whatever. And there, especially like during thunderstorms, just very erratic behavior, weaving back and forth. And sometimes I would actually just stand there and cry because I just did not know what to do to help her. And I'm not sure, years ago I had read Shauna's book. So that was already in the back of my mind somewhere, but I don't know what prompted me to think of it again. But I did, and I looked her up online and I saw she was still doing things and I saw she had these coaching calls. So I asked the owner if she would pay for me to talk with her 6 times. And Shauna still owes me a call, by the way. I just want everyone to know. But I just started implementing what Shauna said. I mean, she was most of the calls were just her giving me the science. And I think she was trying to make sure that I understood why we were doing what we were doing. But she was also having me have the horse touch a target. And at the time I was like, okay. But, you know, I didn't say that to her at the time, but I was just like, I don't understand what this is doing, but okay. And slowly but surely, we started to undo these neural pathways. And now I do understand what was going on, and Shauna can explain that more. But that is how I started to get into what, you know, where I am now, which is real deep. But Shauna came here, two and a half years, not even, probably 2 years ago. It's been great teamwork because we bring completely different things to the table. Right. And I don't know anybody who has entered the horse world by way of positive reinforcement. No one. So it's quite interesting and special.
So when you switch from conventional training methods to positive reinforcement, there's a noticeable difference. What can you give some specifics on what sort of difference you'll see?
Yeah, because I have horses here who were born here. I have a 16-year-old, for example. Her name is Hadley. And when we did traditional training, when I was working for this person, we were very nice to the horses. There were times where, you know, if we had one that was rearing or something, we would have to get a little bit into the horse. I don't know how else you want to say it, but to try to correct that behavior so it didn't become a longstanding issue. And I'm not proud of those moments, but yeah, the difference is huge. Like if you look at that horse now, she hasn't done a lot of positive reinforcement because we are on the road a lot, but what little bit you can tell, there's a huge difference in just her demeanor. Like when we come around, she's like, I want to be with you. I want this relationship with you guys. And all the horses, when we walk out to the barn, they're just ecstatic to see us. And it is not because we're just handing them food. It is because we have developed a relationship based on trust, and because we have, we've helped them to understand that they can completely feel safe with us.
Right. So shifting gears, I'm in horse trailers, and you know, a lot of folks come to us with problems. My horse won't load. My horse doesn't travel well. Can you guys provide some practical example of positive reinforcement that could be used for just the challenges involved with loading and surrounding trailers in general?
Yes, I think that it's a huge topic, you know, because so many people struggle with it. And I think that it's partly because there's so many elements to trailer loading, you know, so it's getting in the trailer's part. Traveling is another, getting out of a new place is another, but then it always backs up to the trailer represents maybe a component down the road that they don't like. So they're like, I don't want it. And then some of them, it really directly is the trailer. They're like, it smells different. It, you know, it's, I'm being closed in the space. I don't know. So it can be all different things, different factors that can be the struggle. But I think the trailer then comes to represent whatever the struggle was, you know? So now they, when someone comes and says, my horse doesn't like the trailer, then I say, okay, so your horse. So in a nutshell, everything our horses do is a choice they make. They're going to choose the thing with the strongest reinforcement history. So they're either getting something they want or avoiding something they don't want. That's just how learning works. That's how they learn to find food and, you know, avoid the predators or the sun or whatever, you know, thing they need or don't need. And so when they look at, if a horse looks at the trailer and says, oh, big fat no, then I say, then it's more reinforcing for them to get away from the trailer than to see the trailer. So we'll start, we want to shift their associations. And one of the things that people think it's all about the food, it starts about the food. It is a really important component and a really, really valuable commodity. But as we get going down the road, we want to shift it to being less about the food and more about playing the game. They've done studies where they gave animals free food, then they taught them to hit a lever for food, and they give them both options back, and they tend to ignore the free food and go to the lever for food. So we want to engage them in that kind of game. So the target becomes target is just like a buoy on a stick. And we used it for everything for the marine mammals, everything they learned. We didn't have halters and lead ropes. So everything they were taught was through the targeting. So the targeting is a great tool with the horses too, because it's a way that we can give them choice, but we can ask them and give them direction and clarity in what we're looking for. And it becomes a bit of a safety. And that has to do with the association being made and the classic conditioning, just like the trailer develops this association that it is visceral. You know, so a horse that doesn't like it, a lot of times at that point, they don't even know why they don't like it. There's like danger, you know? So it's not right. Like they go, I don't like it because I get in, then trucks pass us when we're driving. You know, it's not that. They just go, no, danger, you know? And so it's kind of becomes a visceral response or a visceral feeling they have. Well, the target, on the other hand, when it's paired with things they like and want, desire, it has a different visceral response. They like it. They don't know why. It makes them feel safe. And we've seen that from observations for 30 years now, that I go, I don't even know what that's about. So utilizing the target and its good association is a way that we may take a horse first to the side door and say, we don't even want you to go to that open mall of the trailer, which represents all the scary stuff. We just say, can you put your head in here and just touch, you know, it's not where they can walk in there. You know what I mean? It's just putting their head in and touching a target and get them used to the sounds, the smell, and looking in there without it turning into that 45-minute struggle. That, you know, when once a horse has gotten to a point where they don't load, it's typically to the point where the horse is like, you know, they're really, really expecting. Yes, they're totally done. And it represents that whole battle. And the honest truth is, it's fear. And so they, for some reason, the trailer represents a fearful situation to them. And so when they see the trailer, they go into fight or flight, and they start thinking flight, 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 flight. So once they get into that fight or flight situation, it means they perceive it as a dangerous situation. Even though we go, it's just a trailer, it is their reality. That's how they feel. And so we just need to go, okay, I hear you. So let's work about this a little differently, so we can start to teach them that being near it, being around it, being on it are all good prospects and good things to do. And so we start sometimes with something as little as that, you know, or we'll take them and have them walk across the ramp or, you know, near the back of the trailer, but going sideways. You know what I mean? So just walking past it, not going directly towards it, which represents and feels like that whole predictable, scary pattern. We'll just say, hey, we're just going to be near it. When we're near it, good things will happen. Little tiny bits. And we keep it short and sweet until we start to have them kind of, you know, having a better association. And we can see it because now they're kind of walking boldly to the trailer, or they're even pulling us to the trailer. And sometimes we're like, no, we're done. And they're like, wait, I could still do more. And you're like, no, we're done. Back off. And so it's just building those pieces again, wherever the horse is. And it is trying to recognize it. Maybe other pieces are part of it, you know, so whatever you can do to think, maybe it is the noise and then getting a quiet trailer, or, you know, doing whatever you can to get to maybe consider that maybe it's just not the trailer, but we need to address the first things first, getting them on ear around the trailer. And one time, so a lot of times what we'll try to do is get them, also teach them to get in the trailer. And now we're going to learn some other fun thing with positive reinforcement. So once we're in the trailer, we're going to work on a retrieve, you know, we're going to work on lifting our legs or holding on a stationary target. So we kind of say, it's not what you think. We're just coming into this little tiny barn and working on some piece. So pretty soon there was a time they look forward to it. There was a time working with elephants at the Budapest Zoo. And so there was a part of the zoo that used to be where the elephants slept. And I was told that they really did not like that area because it's a small area for elephants to sleep, because the zoo was built long ago, you know, and back when zoos were just cement, you know, that's what we did. And so now they had redone the zoo. They had this other area where they stayed overnight. So this little area was just their area where they would come in and do training sessions, working on presenting their feet and presenting their ears and presenting their trunk, all things that were husbandry, you know, veterinary procedures. Well, when that door started going up, elephants are shimmying under the door to get in there. So this was a room they hated. And now is a room they love because it was all where all the fun stuff happened. So it sometimes when we finally get them in the trailer and then we can close them in the trailer, people just want to move or they want to shut that door so fast when they're still like, I've got one more, you know, maybe it was just one mental foot out the door. And then they get closed in and then we trigger them to fight or flight again. So if when we can get them closed in, we can say, hey, we're just going to go in here and do these things. And then we can let them back out. It starts to become more and more of a safety. It takes a little bit of time. You know, we just have to be patient with some of these horses that have a longstanding association that, you know, sometimes we get through it with traditional training, but there's certain horses that have now put up a big giant hoof and said, no, I'll get dangerous before I do this. Dangerous to me, dangerous to them, you know, to themselves, whatever it might be. So to kind of come about it a little differently, give them a little chance, give them freedom when you can to, like, you can leave if you want to. And what we found is a lot of times what they do when they can leave, they're like, you mean I can leave? Then I can come in because I can leave, you know? So sometimes we start there and add the equipment later. So there's a lot of little things that we can try. Another thing too, is a lot of times people get them where they stop on the ramp and then they look for them to move begrudgingly 1 foot forward, then they feed them. And you're like, okay, in the beginning, we need to do that because we need to say moving, moving, moving. But what is that? Really, it's a stopping. It's not moving, you know, and loading is a fluid behavior. And so sometimes focusing on the back feet, we can start saying your back feet moving are really important because it's the locomotors that get them in. So there's a lot of little tactics that we may deal with depending on where we feel like the horse's struggle might be or what we're seeing from their, you know, who they are and their personality or, you know, what would you add to that?
Nothing.
Yeah, great insight. I'm going to download your course and see if it'll work on my toddler. I really like the concept for sure. Shauna, Jesse, you know, thank you guys so much for sharing your knowledge and your experience with us today. To all of our folks who are listening, you know, I hope this episode has shed some light on positive reinforcement and that approach into horse training. So be sure to check out Shauna and Jesse's work. Go to their website at Shauna Karish. Karish? Yes. Yeah. .com. That's SHAWNAKARRASCH.com. And of course, we'll put all of that down in the comments as well under the videos. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brad. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.